bring the meeting to order. Today is Monday, March 12th, 2018. And this is the meeting of the Carson City Advisory Board to manage wildlife. Tamar, can you please take roll?
Chair Beamer.
Here.
Vice Chair Martin.
Present.
Member Green.
Here.
Member Stewart.
Here.
Member Young.
Here.
The quorum is present.
Thank you, Tamar. And was the meeting properly noticed and posted?
Yes, it was.
Thank you very much. I'd like to ask everybody, do we even have a flag? Okay, let's go ahead and forego the Pledge of Allegiance if we can, and we'll move to public comment. The public is invited at this time to comment on and discuss any topic that is relevant to or within the authority of the Carson City Advisory Board to manage wildlife. The board reserves the right to limit the amount of time that will be allowed for each individual to speak and may place reasonable restrictions on the manner of public comment. The board is precluded from acting on items raised during public comment that are not on the agenda. Public comment pursuant to this item should be limited to items listed on the agenda. Do we have any public comment? Mr. Kevin Bailey.
Sir, Chairman, Advisory Board members, this is such an honor and a pleasure to be here with you and to see each one of you. Bailey Fishing Pond is my public comment. Was reopened Friday, March 9. Was given what amounts to a clean bill of health according to wet labs testing and green water laboratory received March 7 by Carson City Parks and Rec. The pond was closed on January 30th, Tuesday, and reopened Friday, March 9th. That's a total of 38 days of lost opportunity time for the angling public was the result. I don't blame Carson City Parks and Rec for closing the pond as they had to do it. The orange substance and oily slick that accompanies it has been at the pond site since the original hole was filling with water a year before Endow stocked it the first time, which means that if Endow and the engineers who were contracted to build the pond saw a reason not to build the pond, the first scoop of soil, the project at the time of the scoop, first scoop of shovel, scoop of soil, the project would have been scrubbed at that time. So before one fish was wasted, that would have happened, period. An Endow biologist who will not be named stated to me that this iron fungi is far from unusual occurrence in the Sierra. On Sunday, March 11, I witnessed a steady stream of anglers counting 18 of varying ages that were fishing. There will be 3 trout in the classroom releases there this week at Bailey's. The last stocking, according to my records, was on November 1st of 2017. That was 225 pounds of McConaughey rainbow trout, a Scotch Irish rainbow. The count was 740. So I will say to the public, please come get them. I wish to thank Parks and Rec. Okay, by all accounts, by those who fish the pond on a regular basis, that no one has become ill from eating the fish from Bailey's. I wish to thank Parks and Rec, Jennifer Budge, David Navarro, Alan Biddle, and Kim Tisdale of the Nevada Department of Wildlife, actually, and Dan Castens, who is now, like I believe, third generation, who is now working for Carson Parks and Rec. This was not an inexpensive episode, and a public thank you, in my opinion, should be happily and graciously given by the one who felt that they were doing the community a service. I want to thank this board for hearing me out. Any questions?
Mr. Chairman, just a question. It made the news. Bacteria that was finally speciated there, is my understanding is it's not a human contact concern, or is it? What can you do? you have any information on the bacterial strain?
Actually, I don't have the actual documents with me. I believe I may have sent them to some of the individuals, but just in as far as layman's terms, I've seen the lab report and they are benign. It is a benign occurrence. It is just, it's an orange fungi that has absolutely no detrimental effects on human or animal.
Right.
Bottom line.
Right. It'd be good if we can avoid that in the future, that shutting it down because of that.
And
yes, sir.
And my understanding was that, based on our conversation, Kevin, was the Endow is actually the ones who recommended that the city shut it down?
No.
Did I misunderstood that? Or?
It was possibly my deliverance to you.
Okay.
I was probably pretty excited about it.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't. It was the city.
So the city
it was
shut
Carson
it down.
City Parks and Rec.
So was the, but the biologist that identified it was from Endow, is that correct? Am I missing that?
No. No, the biologist who I said was unnamed has been a biologist for a very long time. He's no longer serving in that capacity, but he has witnessed this occurrence in many other such places. And nobody has ever gotten sick from it that they know of. Nobody has ever.
So who discovered it in Bailey Pond?
Do not know that at this time.
I mean, who made the city aware of that there was an issue?
Supposedly, a fisherman that spoke to Alan Biddle, and who is the gendarme. He's the park ranger, and the park ranger explained to him that it's been here forever. Nobody's gotten sick. Nobody's gotten injured. That it's a known thing.
So who made the call to close the pond down?
Well, after this individual who went to, like, Parks and Rec, Public Works, and a host of other places raising a red flag, they had no choice but to close it. They, meaning Parks and Rec,
okay.
Until they got laboratory proof that it was fine,
okay.
And that they did, of which I explained previously.
And was that communicated to the individual?
I have no idea who this individual is yet.
Okay. I agree with Mr. Vice Chairman. We need to probably learn from that so it doesn't happen again. I'm hoping that Parks and Rec has kind of done their due diligence there to realize that
they become highly educated.
Okay.
They've educated themselves. Unfortunately, they weren't around when the pond was originally open,
yeah.
For the most part, and didn't realize. I mean, all they had to do was probably contact Loomis and Associates and the engineers who did.
Yeah, they had to have done a soil.
Yes, sir. There wouldn't have been one
even
fish placed into that. The pond wouldn't be in existence.
Right.
Okay. If they had found something wrong.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Sounds great. Yeah.
Anything else I can do for you?
That's it.
Thank you so kindly for your time.
Thank you for your report.
It's a tip jar.
Yeah.
Where's the cookies?
Any other further public comment at this time?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a public comment.
Okay.
I recently participated in a adult hunter ed class, and it was held at the Clear Creek Bowman Archery Range, and I want to give a really big thank you to both Clear Creek Bowman, who opened the complex, provided some of their 3D targets, and were very gracious help and hosts. And I'd also like to give public recognition to Carson City Parks and Rec, specifically Jennifer Budge, and I'd like to make sure she hears that thank you. And she was extremely cooperative, and it was a really good place to hold a adult 4-hour class. And we also had a discussion between all three parties of the potential of partnering with the Department of Wildlife, Carson City, and Clear Creek Bowman to upgrade that into a hunter ed instruction facility with potential for power, water, and making it a really first class instructional facility. And lastly, John Valley, thank you for participating at that. So Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Appreciate that report. Any other further public comment at this time? Seeing none, we'll move to agenda item number four, which is our annual election of Carson City Advisory Board to manage wildlife chair and vice chair. As you guys remember, we typically do this on the first meeting of every year, and we failed to get it on the agenda for the last meeting in February. With that, I would open up nominations for chairman and or vice chairman if that's the board's pleasure.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to nominate Gene Green as chairman.
So we have a motion to nominate Gene Green as chairman for the upcoming 2018-2019 year. Any further discussion? Do I have a second? You said second? So did you get that, Tamar?
I have it.
Doug and Gil?
Yeah.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Mr. Green.
Thank you.
You want to take over?
I thought this was your last show.
Hey, no, you're welcome.
This is your show for me.
You're welcome to go for it, buddy.
Next item of order is election of a vice chair, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Do we have a nomination for the vice chair position?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to nominate Gil as vice chairman.
Okay. Hey, sir.
Such a face.
Why?
What do you mean? I don't have enough to do. Thank you.
And I will second that. Any discussion? Vote on that. Okay. All in.
The normal is call for a vote.
Call for a vote.
Perfect. All those
in favor, say aye.
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 And I'll be glad to help you with little hints.
Yeah.
As yeah, will, I'm sure.
All of us. Okay.
All of us will.
Gil.
All of us will.
I think you guys all know my phone number.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. We'll use it.
Okay. Next action on the here is four possible action. We have the act to approve the minutes of the last meeting on January 22nd.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Call for
Call for discussion.
Call for discussion.
Just in case anybody wants to add in. Okay, no discussion. All in favor? Aye.
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 Okay, approved. Possible action, adoption of agenda. Do we have any... A call on anything for tonight's agenda? Is that correct?
I would move to accept the agenda as written, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Second.
Any further discussion? Call for a vote.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay. Okay, informational disclosures. Any member of the advisory board may inform the chair of his intent to make a disclosure of a conflict of interest or an item on any agendized item or relative to the advisory board business. Disclosures of conflicts of interest must also be made at the time of the specific agenda item when it is introduced. Do we have any disclosures tonight? Okay, so informational item update. Now these items are stuff coming up on the end-out meeting, and these are informational and open to discussion. Number nine for
possible. We're on number eight.
Number eight, informational items update on the activity report on the Carson City Urban Wildlife Committee.
Mr. Chairman, the only thing I'd like to report is the Endow is continuing their urban education program.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, I believe, recently posted an update to their urban wildlife program. And I think all members should go to Endow's urban wildlife website page. It's an excellent source of urban wildlife information. And member Beamer, anything else?
I do have one other thing. I did reach out to the city on this just to see if they had received any other complaints. Because the weather's been so nice, people have been out walking, right? And they have had two issues with bear sightings that they reported to Endow.
Mm-hmm.
It was taken care of. I believe he set a trap and it was unsuccessful. So I think it was maybe a one-time shot. A bear came out of a den or something and then went back in probably. The other thing was that they have had some issues with some further issues of coyote sightings in actual parks that we have. One being the park over here off of College Parkway. And apparently a coyote came after somebody walking their dog on the sidewalk in that park, and that's fenced area. And so I believe the city was going to place signs on those, and I kind of inquired about warning signs, you know, in pretty much all the parks across the city, what their thought was on posting those. And she thought that was a great idea and was going to look into it and see what the cost would be associated with that, as well as whether or not it would be feasible. So,
which park was that? Was that the one?
It's the one that's in the Silver Oak development there.
Oh, okay, in Silver Oak. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
And because there's one over there on the corner of Mary and James, too. And there's coyotes there every day, but they have never bothered anybody.
Apparently another one got in the Fremont school grounds. Superintendent Stokes shared that with me, that got in the school grounds and there were kids out there playing and it was running around the outskirts looking for food and the teachers freaked out and called the kids in and closed recess down the whole shoot match. So anyway, those things have happened. And then we did another pretty cool songbird event with the public, which was kind of fun. Some two Boy Scout troops organized it, and so I came I serve as the bird study merit badge and as an instructor for that. And we went out and saw some really cool stuff. I mean, cedar waxwings, cool warblers that we typically don't see in Carson City. And it's just all about the weather we've been having has been great. And then the ducks and waterfowl species that we've been seeing here the last couple of months have just been fabulous. I don't think I've ever seen as many canvasbacks in urban ponds and down by the river that I've ever seen. In fact, I saw some just right off of Fish Street here by the prison, that little pond. There was a pair of male canvasbacks that actually landed in that pond. I thought, you can believe that. I'd never seen anything like that. So pretty cool. I got some great photos of it. So
do you know, I haven't even looked at the plan for the Lapa stuff. Is that pond going to remain? Any of you know?
I don't know. You know, the one thing is they do have a lot of drainage and a lot of wetland. And you saw the article in the paper. They're going to be moving a lot of soil from Casino Fandango over there. Mm-hmm. But they cannot destroy
the wetlands. Yeah.
All they can do is fill, but they're going to have drainage and wetlands in there. So that probably part of, I assume, and you know what happened, but they're probably going to have open space associated with wetlands.
Yeah.
Something off the side of the freeway?
Well, on the east side of the freeway is the drainage for the NDOT, and that's the one over by the prison where you probably saw the canvas back. And Lampa Ranch is on the east side, right across from that. So I don't know. It'd be a good question.
Yeah, I was just curious, because it's, I know the trucks are moving dirt, and they're...
They're going to be...
They started it this week.
Yeah. Anything else on item eight?
That's it. That's all I have to report.
Okay, let's go to item nine. Carson City Advisory Board to manage wildlife consent agenda items, and this is broken into several, A through H. For additional information on these items, they were posted on the Endow public meetings and commission agenda. I looked through a couple of them. I don't know about the rest of you. It was pretty good, and some of this is brought over from last year too. So item 9A for possible action.
Mr. Chairman,
yes,
may I suggest, just a suggestion. This item is typically a consent calendar, which means we can adopt all of it at one particular time.
Oh, yeah.
Or members can pull
items
for further discussion. Okay. So, I mean, it's your privilege to pull them all, Mr. Chairman, or ask for items to be pulled.
I would ask that items be pulled, because this is, there's so many of them, and at this time, we can adopt the whole nine, or we can pull some items. So any of your members, do the members want to pull items?
So I would like to, pull item 9E.
9E.
And I would like to pull item 9G. Are you on the same page?
Yep.
Okay.
Okay.
All the rest I'm good with.
Gil?
No, they picked the ones I wanted to.
That's what I would like to discuss.
Okay. Okay, so then we can move to adopt the rest of it, except for those items which we'll discuss.
Mr. Chairman, may I make a motion that we... that we ratify the agenda item 9, and that we support the items as written, with the exception of 9E for further discussion and 9G for further discussion.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Can we have a vote? All in favor say aye.
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 Public comment?
Oh, public comment?
Mr. Chairman, public comment is when we're adopting the consent calendar, I don't think public comment is necessary tomorrow, unless you have guidance otherwise. But in the past, if we're adopting the consent...
The last meeting I attended, Adriana said public comment after every motion, so I'm just being diligent.
Well, that would include then adoption of the agenda.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Okay, well... That's new to me.
Okay.
I just went to a new class.
So. Okay. So all right, then, you want to go back out to... Do you want... Okay, you're fine.
Okay, then. I'm going to bring this back out to the public for comment. Any public comment?
So just so everyone, if I may, Mr. Chair,
yes,
everyone understands, the two items that we're pulling off the consent agenda to discuss, we'll open that up to public comment. These public comment for the remaining agenda items is what we're asking for now.
Right, and the items we're pulling, just for the public, in case you're not aware, are the distance requirement, that safe hunting distance regulation. We're going to be discussing that. And then the other one is the waterfowl regulations and seasons. We'll be discussing that.
Okay. My only question, C.K. Bailey, for the record, again. This is not including the other agenda items we need to attend.
Only nine.
Is that correct?
Only nine.
Just one thing on that.
Only nine.
Thank you.
Nine.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now I can move for approval of all the items which have not been pulled.
Which I believe there's a motion on the floor.
And a second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, moving on to pulled agenda item 9E for possible action, the commission. This is the general regulation on the safe hunting distance. There's been a lot of discussion on it, and I guess we'll have some too. Who would like to open this up?
I can start out, if I may, Mr. Chair. I received, I'm sure that it was a blind carbon copy, so I'm sure other members may have received this as well. I feel like it's important to make part of the record. Mr. Rex Flowers sent an email out to
everybody.
Did he send it? Did everybody receive that?
Every county wildlife advisory board member got one in the state of Nevada.
Okay, so is there any, unless you, I'll open up to your appetite there, Mr. Chairman. Do you feel like we need to read this aloud or just make it part of the record? Or
go ahead and read it aloud.
Okay.
It's not very long.
It's not.
I didn't
not.
Bring a copy, so.
I'll read it just for everyone's benefit and just for Rex's benefit. I think he points out some things here that may concern some people. So this is from Mr. Rex Flowers. I am emailing you in hopes that you will take action to turn down this newest regulation. This workshop is being held to accept, deny, or modify this proposal, and the right vote would be to just no and blank no. There are several different issues which I will speak to in the following paragraphs. As stated, safe hunting distances would refer to there being a public safety issue, but the department can only show one incident with other anecdotal information. Public safety should be held in the local government trust and stated through NRS 244.364. Local officials and law enforcement are most knowledgeable of both needs and desires for their communities, is what he's referring to there. They do not need oversight from Big Brother. If you review the current county ordinances, you will find that every county has some form of discharge of firearms regulation, even to the extent that most state it is illegal to use archer equipment in county parks. There is no reason that these counties can take further action on their own. I think he's trying to say cannot take further action on their own if they so feel there is a need. In fact, if you review these different county ordinances, you will find some have already taken those actions to protect their constituents. This regulation will be in conflict with all current county regs and may only further complicate the issue as to who has what authority and when. I would believe the commission and department would want to keep regulation as simple as possible rather than put individuals at a greater risk of breaking any laws. Another problem that arrives with this regulation is overreach by the department. If you were to review both the meeting minutes and video from February 2017 meeting, it was never noted for the department to take any action with regards to firearms. During commission discussion, Commissioner Hubbs asked Chief Game Warden Turnipseed if what he was suggesting as a follow-up to the presentation was for regulation for archery and crossbows or more, and he stated he was looking for regulation of all weapons. When the motion was made by then Commissioner Drew, he stated that the commission give direction to the department for regulation of archery and crossbows. Again, Commissioner Hubbs asked Commissioner Drew about the other firearms, and Commissioner Drew stated this was for archery and crossbows only, as he felt each of the counties had a handle on firearms discharge. That motion passed unanimously. The current proposal is a breach of that guidance and in direct conflict of the motion as stated. Lastly, if you are a conspiracy theorist, given consideration to the following facts. This CGR was to be heard last month in Reno, but suddenly dropped and then immediately scheduled for Laughlin. Are you aware that over 90% of all meetings held in Reno are teleconference, yet less than 40% of those held in Clark are teleconference? Laughlin is an hour and a half drive south of Las Vegas. Looks as though some certain individual may not want the public to have an opportunity for in-person input. When meetings are held in Reno, cab attendance averages 10 cabs, while in Las Vegas it averages 6. Given this is a one-day meeting 95 miles south of Las Vegas, it will be really interesting to see how few cabs show. Again, is this also by design? Just my thoughts. In closing, I am most hopeful that the commission will stop this CGR from any further review. The cabs will state their complete disinterest in any further regulation, and those in the general public receiving this email will hopefully flood their prospective cabs and with commissioners that there is no appetite for this CGR. Thank you for your consideration in this matter, end quote. Thanks, Rex Flower. So, with that,
can I get a copy of that for the record?
I'll email it to you.
Thank you.
Okay?
You have it right there, don't you?
If you want a hard copy.
I didn't get one, so if you're willing to part with it, I'm fine. Thank you.
So, I don't know. In my opinion, you know, there's some things here that I think Rex is I agree with him on, in my personal opinion, but there are some other things I think he may be a little bit off
dramatic.
On. A little bit dramatic, if you will. And I like Rex Flowers. I think he's a great guy. And I think it's great that he's bringing this to people's attention. With regard to him stating how there's a conflict with county ordinances, that's absolutely correct. I mean, the state, my understanding of state regulations is this, that regulations are to clarify statute, right? To give clarification to statute. And so I haven't looked at the statute that this would actually be referencing, and whether or not there truly is that clarification that would be present there. The incidents that he's referring to in this letter, he did share with me which ones he's referring to, and all of those were governed by a county ordinance and were covered except for the one in Genoa. And the one in Genoa did not, because Douglas County didn't include archery bows and crossbows in their ordinance, which I believe has been corrected or is in the process of being corrected, there was a little bit of an issue there, and I think that's maybe where Chief Turnipseed may have been trying to go with this, and so my concern is that here the department's going to be trying to provide clarifying language in regulation, and I'm not sure that it really follows what the statute states there. And so, and also his point that the counties do have, each county is different, and really there could be a general regulation in by county or by state, and the county can go in and make their own municipal regulations, which many of them have. And that's why the state has always stayed out of that, because it is a county by county basis, and it really depends on the topography and the city limits of counties. And so I'm a little concerned at that. I would agree with him on that to a certain point. The other thing that he talks about here is, you know, I don't know whether he's referencing Chief Turnipseed or not, but I don't know if Tyler really has any malicious intent here, except that it's mainly a concern for public safety. And so I agree with Tyler on that. You know, I mean, that's what his position is, you know, and I'm all for not making regulations that don't need to be made, but just to insinuate that, you know, we're trying to do this so that they can kind of get the upper hand on counties. I don't know if I'm buying that. And so anyway, I'll leave it at that.
I received letter from the Coalition for Nevada's Wildlife. Maybe some of you received it also. I'd like to read that into the record. It's along the same lines as what Rex did. It says that the Coalition for Nevada's Wildlife stands opposed to the new proposed regulation CGR 473, safe hunting distances. We feel that safe hunting distances would imply public safety, and that is currently covered under NRS 244.364.2. A Board of County Commissioners may proscribe by ordinance or regulation the unsafe discharge of firearms. We feel that county commissioners and their immediate law enforcement departments know best the needs and desires of their local communities on public safety issues. It will be best to allow counties and their personnel to continue to do what is best for their citizens at the local level. We would hope that all those receiving this correspondence will forward like comments to their prospective CABs, and the Wildlife Commission quickly and asked that this regulation be withdrawn from any further consideration.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate being able to discuss this. I'd like to respond to Rex and to the Coalition. I don't disagree with them, but they are not local sportsmen to Carson City, and I think this is our voice and our chance to be heard. I think they bring up some good points. I think from a perspective of why this is here, I think we all know that this is really probably stemming from some archery shooting that has occurred both in Carson City and in Douglas County in and near Genoa within certain distances. This is really not, the root, as far as I know, is not firearms and discharge of firearms. I think it's an archery issue, and I think what it is that people are hunting in an urban setting in areas where they don't have permission to hunt. You have to have permission to hunt on private ground, and I think part of the problem is that this regulation is trying to over-regulate, as member Beamer just stated. It's trying to over-regulate something. One of the things that Tyler Turnipseed, chief game warden, stipulated, and these are his words. He says that this regulation was initially drafted to resemble Carson City's ordinance, which specifies distances of 1,000 and 5,000 feet respectively. But preliminary discussions, he doesn't say with whom, revealed several unintended impacts of those distances around the state. We are now suggesting distances of 500 and 1,500 feet that more closely resemble Douglas County's ordinance. Then he goes on, and his conclusion is, the need for a statewide regulation on this issue is to give some consistency to different areas of the state that may have conflicting local ordinances or no ordinance at all. While several local jurisdictions have ordinances addressing this issue, most of them are silent on archery hunting, which has caused several conflicts in recent years. So he actually says the issue is archery here.
The archers, yes.
And it's not archery shooting. And quite frankly, I'm rather upset about this, because as an archer, I need to, and I want to, be able to continue shooting my bow in my own backyard at a very safe target in a very safe manner. And you know, they're getting into an area where in the ordinance and in the Legislative Council Digest, again, I believe this is Chief Turnipseed's language. Let me read. This regulation makes it unlawful for a person, and maybe this is LCB's language.
Yes, LCB.
Okay, then LCB wrote, this regulation makes it unlawful for a person during any period in which he or she engages in hunting to discharge a firearm, to draw or release an arrow from a bow, or to draw or release a crossbow or bolt from a crossbow with certain distances of occupied dwellings without the consent of the owner or occupier of the dwelling. Well, all of this is really interesting, and what it tells me is that every local community has the right to set up their own ordinances. And the department provided with their packet, they provided Carson City's ordinance, they provided Douglas County's ordinance, they provided Washoe County's congested area ordinance, and they provided the city of Reno's ordinance. And their intent was to show us that each one is different. To me, that's a good thing, because each local community that had an issue set up their own ordinance. And you know, Chief Turnipseed, you know, he's trying to make things so everything is equal everywhere. Well, that's good. I can understand why he would want to do that, but that's not what we need to do. We need to continue to keep this in the hands of locals. And, you know, just because Austin doesn't have this, that's because the people in Lander County have not deemed that they need an ordinance like Carson City or Douglas County. But they have that right if they want to do it. So, you know, Mr. Chairman, not to belabor this anymore, I'd like to make a motion that Carson City Wildlife Advisory Board strongly not support this item, and that message gets delivered in Laughlin by our attending member, and also gets delivered by our chairman in correspondence to the department, that we do not support this, and in fact we support the continuation of the existing system, giving this control to the local entities where it belongs. That's a long motion, but it's really simple. I can simplify it if you need tomorrow.
No,
I would second that.
And I'm sure we're going to have some discussion from the public on this.
Yeah, I want to point out too that I agree wholeheartedly, because your example with Austin is perfect. You know, population density there isn't the same as downtown Reno. Things are different. I don't need the same rule,
right?
And it should be that way, in my opinion. I understand, as a Tyler Turnipseed, Chief Turnipseed, in his position, he's got rangers all over the place, and he just wants to make it easier to manage them. And I just don't think it's something the state ought to be doing. It ought to be up to the district.
It can't be ubiquitous. No. That it covers everybody.
So one of my concerns, and I'm glad you pointed this up out as well, I was going to mention later, is, you know, I teach archery classes all over the place. And, I mean, we go right over here to the church and set up an archery range for Cub Scouts. And if I wouldn't be able to do that anymore. I wouldn't be able to, like you mentioned, in my own backyard, I have an archery range. I have 15 targets in my own backyard. Where I bring people in and train them, you know what I mean, at my home, and I wouldn't be able to do that anymore.
Seventh-day Adventist Church on College Parkway. I've seen them doing archery back there.
And what
we do an apartment building. Right. You couldn't.
And there's one other thing that I'd like to point out, and I think the public needs to speak on this, and that is, he's saying that we need to do this because local ordinances are all over the board, and some don't have local ordinances, so we need consistency. Well, the local ordinance in Carson City speaks specifically to discharge at any given time. It doesn't say during hunting. This ordinance specifically says that when a person is engaged in hunting, then you cannot fire discharge within 5,000 feet or 1,500 feet or 500 feet or 2,000 feet. So really, these two are apples and oranges. This one is only when hunting. Then these individual communities have said anytime. Yeah. It doesn't matter. So
as
again,
it's
one more reason.
Right to do. Yeah,
one more reason not to
not to approve this.
And the actual language that they have in here is completely different than what he points in here that they revised.
I mean, exactly.
It doesn't show any revision whatsoever in here. But anyway.
That's Mr. Flowers' letter you're talking about.
No, no. I'm talking about actual...
No.
Regulation.
Says that based on preliminary discussions with unknowns, that we are suggesting distances of 500 and 1500, but none of that is reflected in their proposed regulation.
And I mean, for the record, I want to just state that I absolutely respect Chief Turnipseed's position. I think we all would agree with that, most likely, but but I don't know if you saw
And I certainly don't believe Chief Turnipseed would do it. I don't think he's malicious in any way, shape, or form. He's just because he's not that kind of person to begin with. But any more discussion from the board? Now we open this to the public now. Any discussion from the public on this issue?
It's okay, I know who you
are. John Valley, for the record. In listening to your discussion, I agree with what you're saying. I understand it is hunting. If they decide to adopt this, I would strongly recommend that hunting be in bold, italicized, font 34, as opposed to recreational shooting. My wife runs archery in the schools program. Yeah. We shoot inside Fritch Elementary School, and there's no way we're going to go around and knock on all those doors, and there may be times when we have to shoot outside. And we make sure it's a safe environment. We have protocol we follow. However, if it's just for hunting, and it does go that far, I would like to see that hunting be specified very specifically in that regulation. But I do agree that I don't think one size fits most ever. And I think the department's trying to do a one size fits most. And I leave it to the local communities to decide what their distances are.
Thank you. Thank you.
C.K. Bailey again for the record. They missed the blowgun with the venom poisonous dart, and that's why I cannot vote for such a silliness. No and no, and as the gentleman that you read, past chairman, no. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, C.K. Any further comment from the public?
Kevin Law, amen.
Okay. Now we have a motion. Could you repeat your motion again? Because it's long.
The motion is that the Carson City Wildlife Advisory Board does not support this proposed regulation, and we would like to have it made clear to the department that this is a local matter, and there are provisions in statutes allowing local people and local governments to make these decisions.
You also had in your motion that you wanted Mr. Yannick to...
Right, and that Mr. Yannick, please make that message clear.
Exactly.
And in Laughlin.
I'll try my best.
Thank you.
Okay, do we have a second?
I second it.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Thank you. And I'm guessing you're going to Laughlin? Yeah. Thank you. After what I just heard said there.
I think...
go ahead.
No. I think, judging on the amount of emails and stuff that I've seen going back and forth between cabs and individuals and hunting groups and wildlife and biking groups, I don't think that proposal is going to stand a chance.
Well, yeah, but please make...
We absolutely need to make a voice.
I never make a
Carson City. I vehemently opposed.
I heard similar comments from one person in Nye County that said that there isn't any way in the world Clark County can tell them what to do with the bow and arrow because it's obviously a different environment. So anyway,
Mr. Chairman, I got a question for you. Is there a way, as a board, that we can send this to Ledge and explain our distaste for this kind of time and effort.
I got to trust that.
The only reason why I bring that up is because we all know how legislature works. They take something and run 4 miles with it when they only need to run 2 inches with it. And they could totally change this to any and all shooting, not just hunting, if they chose to.
Yeah.
So that would be my only concern about it.
Yeah, I'll let the former chair.
So with the legislature, so pretty much how that works, you know, is there's a workshop mm-hmm. that for the regulation change, which I believe they have had already. There's going to be a second one. All that goes back to the legislature, along with everybody's public comment. And then the legislature takes, their legal department takes all of that into consideration. And I don't even, I mean, if all the cabs are in disagreement with it, then it may not even make it back to let LCD legal, right? If they pull it off, then we don't have anything to worry about that. But even if it did go, they would get all the public comment and everything. So no need for us to do that. That's part of the process, and they do receive that.
Okay. And you can lobby individually when they have the public meetings.
For sure. Yep, there'll be a hearing on it, and you're welcome to go and
I think there's at least two of us out of the five that are registered lobbyists. So you could be too.
No, you can't. You're a state.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I can just go back
out of the camp. You're allowed.
Okay. Moving on to item agenda 9G. This is regulation 18-10, the migratory game birds. Bag limits and special regulations for waterfowl, webless migratory game birds, public hunting is limited on the wildlife management areas and the designated state lands. And this is for the 2018/19 season. The wildlife specialist will go over this stuff. Comments from the board.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, since I have the duck hat on,
yes,
I'll take this issue on. Mr. Chairman, first of all, we're very fortunate tonight that we have our state waterfowl biologist, Russell. If you wouldn't mind having a seat here so we can hear from you as we go along, and there's some really interesting things and just. As a disclosure, I did have a discussion with Russell prior to this meeting, and he's got some great things that he's going to be discussing. One of them is regarding swans, and then we also discussed, Russell and I did, regarding the season start, and he's recommending a season start date of October 6th for our zone, and when we come back to the board, I'm going to recommend that we change that to the 13th, and then we close it on the 27th. One of the things we have, and Russell, I don't want to get into what you're going to explain, but I'll just say that we have some things that we have control of, but a lot and the majority of them is under the control of the Pacific Flyway Council and the Fish and Wildlife Service. For example, we can only, based on them, have a maximum of 107-day season. Is that correct?
That's correct. Russell Wilson, him for the record. That the Department of Wildlife, that's correct, yes.
Right, so we can only have a maximum of 107 days. We can only, they're the ones who set the species limits in there. I mean, we can certainly be more restrictive, but we don't want to do that. For example, they're recommending this year, based upon last year's nesting information, a increase in the pintail limit from 1 to 2. So without any further ado, Mr. Chairman, I recommend we hear some of the interesting things that are going on from our leading expert, our state waterfowl biologist.
Yes, sir. It's here.
Okay. Thank you for hearing me today. I appreciate that, Mr. Chair and members of the County Advisory Board. So I'm not sure what you want me to cover in here. I probably won't go through it species by species on what my what my recommendations are. If it's all right with you, I'll start off with the swan issue that, Doug mentioned here. The 107 days that was mentioned, that varies from year to year and by species to species. For example, within these regulations, proposed regulations, you'll see that SCOP has a maximum here of 86-day season as opposed to 105 for the other ducks and merganser species. The reason being is the federal regulation that drives all this that was mentioned. Right now, SCOP is in a moderate package, which only gives us 86 days, while the rest of the ducks are in a liberal package, which gives us the 107. Less, the 107 includes the youth hunt, so we have 2 days of youth hunt. And so the season ends up being 105 days. And I mention that because you'll notice on most of these seasons that there's a two-day closure in the middle of the season. And that's something that the department implemented a number of years ago in order to allow the season that was set by the Migratory Bird Treaty Act to 107 days. So it would open on a Saturday and close on a Sunday. With the addition of youth days, when we take those 2 days out, it was ending on a Friday. So in order to put that final weekend back in, the department has the two-day closure, which allows us to then end the season on a Sunday, get that final weekend. So with the swans, were further regulated by an environmental assessment that was made. There's been a number of them that originated in 1995. It's been rewritten 3 times. That further restricts the harvest of tundra swans. And they're restricted because of trumpeter swans. Well, it's legal in Nevada to take either species of trumpeter or tundra swans. However, the trumpeter swans are a smaller population, and in particular, the trumpeters that they're concerned about are the U.S. breeding segment of the Rocky Mountain population of trumpeter swans. So within the environmental assessment that was written, it restricts the season length for swans in Nevada. It can't start any sooner than the last Saturday in September, and it must end by the Sunday following, the Sunday closest to January 1st, following January 1st. So that's a really weird way to write a regulation, but that's how the service likes to do it. So that being said, another restriction has always been that Nevada has a quota of 5 trumpeter swans. If and when we get to a 5th trumpeter swan harvested during the swan season, it closes the entire swan season for both species. And we're limited to 650 total swan permits for the state. Utah has similar regulations. They have more permits. They have 2,000 permits, and they're allowed to take 10 trumpeter swans. So when these regulations were set in 1995 through the environmental assessment, the population of trumpeter swans in that U.S. breeding segment of the Rocky Mountain population was half of what it is today. Given that, I started working within the flyway, especially with Utah, but also with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service representative to that body in the flyway, taking another look at these regulations and seeing if we can't relax them because the population has doubled. The EA stipulated, that's the environmental assessment, I'm sorry, I use acronyms all the time, so the environmental assessment addressed an endpoint when we get to this point, and it was, a goal was written for how many adult birds in that breeding segment, and when we reached 90% of the goal, on the 3-year average, so take 3 previous years' surveys, if the average of those 3 years is 90% of the goal, we could consider deregulating. So currently the population is at 100 and 5% of the goal. And so Utah and ourselves have moved to start relaxing these regulations. So we just met. I just came back from a flyway meeting. I got back this weekend from the flyway meeting. This was discussed further. And so what we are working on is we're putting together a package, us being Department of Wildlife and Utah, to put together the information that we have, the population surveys that are available, Nevada's history of harvest. So for the first time ever this year, we reached 5 trumpeter swans.
Okay, that's what this is going to be my question.
So that happened. The fifth swan was harvested on the closing weekend of the swan season.
That's awesome.
So it didn't actually close the season, but it's imminent. In my opinion, it's imminent. In 2011, which was our last good water year, we got to 4. So from 1995 and through 2010, in Nevada, we harvested exactly 2 trumpeter swans. From 2011 to current, we've harvested 11. So there's more trumpeters in the population. That's a success story. We're excited about that.
Yeah.
The fact that we're taking more means there's more out there. It's a success. The population's doubled since 95. We're excited about it, but we want those regulations pulled back. So what we're asking for is a review of the regulations, and we've asked for the season, the swan season, to match the rest of the waterfowl season instead of the January 6th close. We've asked for a review of the quota. We didn't ask for a total removal of the quota. I felt like, and Utah felt like, they'd be less likely to go with that. So we're asked for a review, and we're looking at possibilities of how we can do that. I have recommended a sliding scale. If we had 5 in 95 with that population, and we've doubled, then we should have at least 10. But I want it to be the flyway, the whole system set up for the protection of these animals, so that they're not over harvested. And so if the population starts to slide back down, let's let the quotas slide back down with it, but not just revert back to 5 if it only dips a little bit, but to do it, you know, if it keeps growing, let our quota continue to grow. So that's what I've asked for. I don't know where that will fall out, but we are working on this, and the package that we're putting together jointly is looking at all this past data, and basically we're going to build we're building the story about this is where we've been, this is where we are, so there's no reason why we shouldn't be able to relax some of these as suggested by the environmental assessment itself. So that's as brief as I could be.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, being a swan hunter myself, my son and I, over a 30-year period, we've harvested close to 40 swans. And the interesting thing is, first of all, if you've never swan hunted, I highly recommend it. The tundra swan is not an endangered species. It's not a mute swan. It is the largest North American waterfowl that you can hunt. Well, you can hunt trumpeters.
You can hunt trumpeters.
But we don't target them. But it's an amazing thing when you put out a half a dozen decoys and have a bird with a 7 to 8 foot wingspan cup its wings and come into your spread of decoys. It's absolutely amazing. The other thing too is they're delicious. I'm just telling you now. So having a little bit of experience with swans, field experience, the interesting thing is they're a very vocal animal, and I have a mouth call. My son uses a voice call, and he can turn a swan 9 times out of 10 from a half a mile away. And he has a tundra swan mouth call, and I know probably a dozen people who can call them. I can't do it. I don't have a falsetto. I can't yodel either. But the interesting thing is, when they're vocal, you can tell a tundra swan from a trumpeter swan. Sometimes, though, these trumpeter swans and these tundra swans are totally silent, and they come into your decoys from behind you.
And I've had personal experience with trumpeter swans landing, and we didn't shoot because all of a sudden you hear something that sounds like a really off-key ancient Volkswagen Beetle horn. And you'll hear this thing, and it's just an absolutely amazing. Once you hear a trumpeter swan, you will never forget it's a trumpeter swan.
Now, you can't hear them with a wingspan like that. You'd think you'd be able to hear the...
What's that? Their noise. That's not them cupping their wind. That's actually their call. Yeah. It sounds like a Volkswagen.
No, but I mean when they're coming in, I would think...
Oh, you can hear it over it. Okay. Trust me. Yeah, okay. you can hear swans. But the interesting thing in what the department is doing, and they need to, we need to support this, in my opinion, they're proposing to not increase the number of swan tags. That's still set in here at 500, correct?
650.
650, right. It went up. So what they're proposing to do, and they're having discussions with the appropriate authorities, is rather than have that season close on the first Sunday in January, you've got 650 tags. You cannot kill more than 650.
Have you ever met quota?
No.
No, well, yes. Well, we've never shot 650. Our long-term average is about 140.
That's what I thought.
Is what our harvest is. Yeah, but right. But most years, we don't even sell the 650 permits.
Right.
Nevada is the only state in the lower 48 states that has a swan hunt, which is unique to just three states in the flyway and Alaska. But that we even have a swan hunt is amazing. But we rarely sell out our 650 permits. We're the only state that has hunters are allowed to purchase two permits. And even with two permits, we still most years fail to sell the 650 permits, which Utah tells me for their 2,000 permits, they draw and have roughly a little over 6,000 applicants for their 2,000 permits.
So don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
I'm glad we're not televised today. but the interesting thing is, and what I totally support, is the fact that the department is trying to address two issues. One is extending the season instead of some weird thing from September to the first Sunday closest to January 1st. Extended through the whole 105 days of general waterfowl duck season, correct?
Correct.
That's what you're attempting to do.
Yes.
And then the department's also attempting to increase the trumpeter on a sliding scale commensurate with the doubling of population. So the minimum would be, if the population ever dropped back down to where it was in 1990, whatever it was, it would be five. And then on a sliding scale upward to whatever number that is.
Yeah, make it a percentage of the total population.
Exactly. And that's really not written in the regulation, but it's something that I think, Russell, you're going to take to the commission and say, we're in this negotiation, and if it occurs, I'm going to be coming back for an amendment. Is that how you're going to address it?
There's given the flyway, this will never come up in the commission meeting. Given the flyway structure, if this change goes through, we won't be able to. We're bringing back our final ask for this at the September flyway meeting, and at that point we'll be setting regulation, the frameworks for the 2019.
Okay,
excuse
so
me,
you,
2019,
you won't
2020
be able to
season.
Amend this year.
I won't be able to amend this year. Correct.
All right.
But I would like to point out, since we're coming back to the regulation, a change that's in here, it's a very subtle one, but I wanted to point it out and make sure everyone was aware. So the swans, we have historically had
a draw
for this, for permits. We can't sell all the permits we have. The draw is extremely undersubscribed to, so the department's recommending we do away with that draw and just go over the counter for these permits, with it starting on a given date.
But that's until 600 are sold. What are you going to do then?
So
601.
600. So of the 650 permits, we're recommending that 600 of the permits be sold. And this is on our new online system. You'll be able to just go on and purchase it online, and then they'll mail it to you. Or you can come into a department office and buy them. And in the past, you could only buy it in one location in Fallon. So now you're able to go into most of the department offices and buy one. So when it reaches 600, then you'll only be able to buy it in the department offices. And that's, we can't control the online close enough. We can't exceed the 650 ever. So to make sure we don't exceed the 650, it'll just come back.
I see what you're going to do. You
shut that. Off at 600.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then just buy them at the offices.
Right. Once you get to 600, then if you want one, if there's any left, go into the office.
Correct.
Okay. Correct. Perfect. Right. So I'm really tickled with what the department. I think that's a good way to sell the tags. And so then I would like to make a motion on this, and before I make the motion, I will say that I did have a discussion with Russell regarding my motion, and my motion will be to move the Northwest Zone opening date from the 6th to the 13th, and rather than closing on the 20th, it would close on the 27th. And I asked Russell if there was a biological reason for either having it open on the 6th or open on the 13th. And at that time, and I'll ask Russell to confirm again, at that time he told me there was not a biological reason. It's a sportsman's issue. But I'll again ask you, is there a biological reason on the 6th or the 13th?
Biologically, there's no difference between those days biologically, for either for or against either or.
Right. And so there's really three reasons I'd like to move that. And first of all, I am a part owner in the largest privately owned wetland in the state of Nevada, and that's Stillwater Farms in Fallon, Nevada. We put a lot of water and we grow a lot of feed, and we have to move water. And the later that we can put water out, the better, because it does evaporate. Mm-hmm. The second reason is I have been hunting waterfowl in the state of Nevada since 1972, and I am noticing that you can call it whatever you want, but it is getting warmer over time, and I'm seeing it. And last year there was not a date that I could not hunt because of ice. And in fact, all the ice disappeared last year come about January 5th. And then we didn't have ice for the rest of the year. It used to be you started earlier, so because it would freeze up and the birds would go away. Well, with that though, we also get a reverse migration, and later helps us get into that reverse migration. If it does occur. And with that, it pushes the youth hunts with it. Right now, the youth hunts, if you will, they're attached to our 105-day season. On the front end, it's 2 weeks before in September. On the back end, it's 2 weeks after in February. So if we move this from the 6th to the 6th to the 13th and the 20th for the close to the 27th, that would pull along those youth hunts too. So it would actually push that later youth hunt one more week out into February, which can be a really good thing. And thirdly, and here's another good reason to think about, but this would, and I checked with the department's upland game specialist, Sean, right. I checked with Sean, and if we started on the 13th, that would correspond with the opener of Chukar. And as a waterfowler, I like that opener to be the same day as the opener of Chukar, because then you got the Chukar hunters that are kind of duck hunters going towards Chukar,
yeah.
And then you got the duck hunters who are kind of Chukar hunters going towards ducks. So kind of. It kind of reduces the opener pressure on both sides. So with those three reasons, I would like to make a motion that we support the recommendations of the department as written, with the exception of moving the Northwest Zone from October, the opener from October 6th to October 13th,
and the closure from January 20th to January 27th, with the closure, the two-day closure, remaining the same two dates that they have in here. And with that motion, it also moves the youth hunt correspondingly to 1 week on the front end and the 1 week on the back end. That's my motion.
I would second that.
Okay. One more comment?
If it pleases you, Mr. Chair, there's some things I could rebut on some of this, but also I'd like to point out that it's not that simple. If you move that, we need to go through this regulation species by species because it shifts everything. So it's not as simple as the motion that's on the table.
Well, Mr. Chairman, let me suggest that the only really species that I'm aware of that it would impact would be scop. And that the species by species, does it affect canvasback?
Redheads.
Does it affect mallards?
It impacts the geese seasons, the snipe seasons, the coot seasons.
Right.
All the other species that are involved in the regulation.
Right.
We have to make them all match.
So, Mr. Chairman, with that, I'd like to amend my motion that all northwest starting zones start on the 13th. That all northwest startings dates that are proposed to be the 6th open on the 13th, and all that were proposed to be closed on the 20th close on the 27th.
That would cover everything, right?
No.
Russ?
No.
No?
No.
No.
Okay.
Well,
there's exceptions to everything, right?
Well, what doesn't it cover?
It doesn't cover snow geese, and it doesn't cover swans.
Well, the swans would still be October 13th through January 6th, as it is stated now.
Well, it's currently October 6th.
Right, October 13th through January 6th.
Through January 6th, yes. So you picked that one up, yes. And we give up a week of swans.
Yeah, but having hunted swans for 40 years, I don't see them here the first week of October. They don't show up until Thanksgiving. In mass,
yes.
Is there any kind of local population that you know that people hunt?
No, there's no local populations of trumpeters, okay. Or excuse me, tundra swans. Okay.
Or trumpeters.
Well, they can't hunt there. So,
yeah.
And within the hunt zone.
Right.
And then on snow geese, the season would have to be shifted from what's in your packet to an opener of November 3rd, and then ending on January 27th.
Why is that?
Because of the late season hunt, the February 23rd and 10th.
Right.
We're shifting the close date back a week, so we have to shift the opener also. We don't have enough days to match that. That doesn't...
If you'd have to move that forward a week?
I would have to move...
Okay.
The start date forward, right?
The start date back. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
I would like to modify my amendment on my motion.
Sorry.
That's okay. That's all right. I would like to modify my motion to have it apply to ducks and mergansers. I don't think there's any impact on scop. Can you move that back 7 days?
It does impact scop.
Not if I don't make a motion that we change.
We leave scop the same?
It cannot stay the same. Because
it has to follow the...
Well, it could, but then it's going to open a week before anything else and close... A week before everything else.
Well, you have it opening right now on October 27th.
Correct, but in order to fit the days, it has to be shifted. We only have 86 days.
Well, you have it 86 from the 27th through the 20th.
Correct, but now it's going to be closing January
27th. I am only saying ducks and mergansers. I didn't say anything about scop.
You said scop. Okay, I thought you did. Okay, no, the ducks and mergansers.
Item number one, ducks and mergansers that are currently proposed as October 6th through January 20th. changing that to the 13th and the 27th. Golf is a subset in its own regulation.
Correct, with the closure dates as stated. So.
Well, not for Ducks and McGamblers. No. For SCOP.
For the two-day closure dates remaining the same.
Yes, remaining the same. Yes. Right. Okay.
And then for, so you're just saying Ducks and McGamblers, not SCOP.
Ducks and McGamblers. Okay. Then the next one will be, so my motion is to make Ducks and McGamblers, which are on page 3 of our regulation at the top, for the Northwest Zone, the 13th through the 27th. Got it?
Right.
Okay. Question for you, Russell, on the SCOP. If you wanted that to close on the 27th, then you have to move the October 27th opener to 27 plus
November 7, 3rd.
November 3rd.
Correct.
Is that, you could do that?
Yes.
Okay. And my motion would be to change SCOP from October 27th opener to a November 3rd opener and a closure on January 27th. The reason being, SCOP are a late arrival bird, and I don't see SCOP in really until December. That's when I normally see them. Coots and common moorheads, I really don't care what we do with those, but if to be consistent, let's make them the same as ducks and ducks and McGamblers, which would be open on the 13th and closed on the 27th. Snipe, let's leave snipe the way it is.
It still needs to match.
It does have to match the opening?
Correct.
Okay, let's change snipe to open on the 13th and close on the 27th in the Northwest Zone.
I see where you're coming from. We don't want people just going out there on snipe.
Correct.
Other waterfowl's not open.
Totally agree.
Correct.
Then let's go to Canada geese and brant. Same thing. Let's move that opener to the 13th of October and close on January 27th, and the closure being the same, the 22nd and the 23rd. Okay? White-fronted geese, the same. Change that to October 7th and close on January, open on October 13th and close on January 27th with the same two-day closure. Snow and Ross geese. Now, for some reason, you have this one. This one's unique because you have this one opening on the 24th.
Correct.
So that you can take advantage of the late hunt.
Of the late hunt.
Okay.
And still be within 105 days.
Okay. So can this? Can this, well, with all the things I'm saying so far, do you have a suggestion on what to do with snow and Ross geese?
Not a great one, but for this zone, and it makes things really weird for the Northeast zone, but for this zone, that change would probably require a November 3rd opener and closing January 27th.
Okay, then I would like to make my motion include that. The opener be November 3rd and close on the first closure be on January 27th.
And then the late season.
And then the late season as proposed.
That does lose 2 days, 3 days of goose hunting, which is probably not that important to lose the 3 days. Okay.
Then the falconry season, I noticed that we're going to have to change that to be consistent with the others. So the opener on falconry for migratory would be October 13th, closure on January 27th, with the same two closure dates in the center there. And swans proposed to change it to an opener of October 13th. October 13th and close on January 6th, which I guess is the first Sunday closest to.
Correct. That's
right. Okay.
The hard end date there.
Right. So there, I've amended my motion. Mr. Beamer, you seconded it.
I just want to ask one question on that.
Yeah.
So with the snow and Roski seasons that Member Martin proposed in his motion, do you see any issues with enforcing that or for law enforcement or anything like that?
On the way, no. No. It's no more complicated and difficult than the original proposal.
Okay, perfect.
It's a different season.
Perfect.
Necessary for the late season hunt.
All right, then I would second the motion that Member Martin made. The amended motion, I'm sorry.
Yeah, on a motion like this, do we open it to the public?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, we have a first and a second. Do we have any public?
Russ, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any public comment?
For the record, John Valley. I like the idea of the seasons being a little later for a couple of reasons. One, in the youth hunt, we see more mosquitoes than we do ducks. The earlier we go, it's traditionally warm at 70 degrees.
T-shirts.
DEET's not a good thing for kids right now. The cooler it gets, I think the better off we'll be. And then once again, that reverse migration is looking over the last couple of years, what I've noticed is I'm seeing it more prominent. And so that would help with that youth hunt in the backside also to get some of those full plumage birds coming back. So I'd like as proposed with your amendments.
Russell Wilson with the Department of Wildlife for the record. I forgot to mention the youth hunt needs to be changed also in your proposal.
Well, that was part of the proposal that we moved
to the, okay, good. I missed that. So.
On the front end and on the back end.
Okay,
absolutely.
Thanks,
Russell.
Member Martin didn't mention that. So.
Okay.
Any other public comment? Okay, back to the board. All in favor, say aye.
Real quick, I just have one question for Russ. On the changes that we're proposing for the management areas, was there anything that you wanted to tell us about on that?
So that's mostly
south.
We're just trying to clean some things up. The two things that we changed is when you look at that part of it, every management area now is kind of ordered in the same way with the regulations. And the first one, this is a point of clarification because some problems that arose, that it now reads, number one on almost all of them, before or after any waterfowl season, hunting is allowed every day for wildlife species upon which there's an established season. That wasn't clear on some of the management areas, and so they weren't sure if they could or could not allow hunting. And then the only other change is on the WMAs down south where they do reservations. We just changed the verbiage so that rather than trying to explain what the process was in regulation, it now just reads, the instructions for application of those will be found online.
Okay.
Just to simplify.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 We have that. Okay. That closes agenda number 9. We have no more pulled items. So do we.
You do right along.
Pardon me? Let's move on to number 10. This is a discussion regarding non-regulatory agenda items as part of the March 16th and 17th meeting of NDAO down in Laughlin. Other than the items listed on the consent agenda, the remaining items on the attached 16th to 17th Nevada Board of Wildlife Commissioners agenda typically require no action of the Carson City Advisory Board. Occasionally, one or more advisory board member may have a desire to discuss these items, and such discussions may result in action or advice or a recommendation by this board. There will be no public comment on this unless action is taken.
I don't have any items. Thank you.
None? Okay. We'll move on to, and we don't need a vote on that, correct?
No.
Possible action vote here, possible action. This is item number 11, discussion regarding the status of Ash Canyon Road and access
to help our reservoir. So if I may.
We have.
I'm sorry?
Yes. Yes,
Mr. Chair, if I may. So I reached out to the folks at Carson City and with direction that we received from the last meeting to find out who really has the authority to on that road and to open it and close it and all that stuff. It is Carson City that has that authority. And Ann Bollinger, who's our open space administrator, could not be here today, but she did give me a couple updates. This one doesn't differ too much from the first one that she sent out to us. And pretty much what it says, just to kind of paraphrase it, is as long as we don't get any more weather that would make us degress, their plan is to open that road up for full access spring, summer of this year. So that's it. So it is good news. I'm hoping that they move forward with that. We'll see how that happens, how that works. But and I did receive probably about a dozen emails. I think I counted 12 to 13 emails from our fishing community, not just here in Carson City, but down in the valley, over in Washoe County, as far down as Nye County and some of those other areas, asking about what the heck's Carson City doing with Hobart, man. And so,
I personally have had people contact me too, including Thursday, my doctor called me about it.
Did he want an appointment?
Well, he's a fisherman, but I wanted to comment on this road. It's not just for fishermen. There's a lot of hikers and people that like to go up, drive to the top of that hill and use that parking area and hike them out.
Exactly.
So, and it's greatly missed. It's amazing how many people use it. Ought to be paved, it seems like, you know.
So
come next.
Interesting.
No. No, I'm just, but it's a very, very greatly missed access to the mountain.
I will just say that when I was a kid, growing up in Carson City, I can remember that road having bumps on it, divots on it that were the size of Volkswagen bugs, literally. And if you didn't know how to maneuver that, the way it is right now or has been in the past, recent past is night and day compared to what it used to be. So,
anyway. Yeah, exactly. And you make a really good point. And I'm gonna ask Mr. Valley to come up here for a second. But, you know, 25 years ago, getting up that road was no worse than the way it was with that washout.
That's right. I would honestly attest.
You know, and we all got to drive up and you know, and the reason I'm asking you to come up here, John, is because you're almost nearly a daily walker up that road. And to me, this is probably one of our Carson City's best assets for outdoor experience fishing, which is part of our responsibility. And it was a real shame that it was closed down. So, Mr. Valley, I'd love to hear from you, your personal experiences over the last bit of time.
Over the last 3 months, I'm John Valley for the record, but over the last 3 months, I probably compacted that road about an inch myself. I go up about 3 or 4 days a week. I walk up to it, and I walk to the top, get above Gil's house. But the road, as it is graded now, will not be anything like it's been even before. It is at least a double wide road. There are very few wash berms. And when you mention pavement, it looks about as good as, it looks like road base up there right now.
Really? Yeah.
They are gonna have to put in some channeling for erosion. They do have part of the hill that came off that they took down before is now off again. And I don't know when the last time the director was up there to look at it. But there's no tracks that indicate that they were up there recently, but they have another area that is sloughed off again, so they're going to have to do some, either contain that hill or remove enough debris that it won't slough off. But it's a pretty good angle, and there's not much holding it because of the fire. A few thistles, which are not my friends either, but anyway, the road is very nice up to the last landing. That's the first landing I call is before the culvert where they logged. And then there's one up in the turn, and then you get into the taller pines, and then there's the one on the top. They haven't done anything from the road from there up. That still is as it was.
Is there very much damage in that section?
From there
up to Lakeview,
there's a bunch of deadfalls in the road and stuff. And I'm, you know, in the past, I know people who've gone up there on their ATVs independently and had a chainsaw and moved some of those logs to make it clear. But I'm assuming the city's going to have to drive that and make it an all clear before they open it for liability purposes, I would assume. But it is a good road, and they did a pretty good job cutting it before the weather came. But they do have a little bit of repair to do now that we've gotten some more weather. But it's a good road.
You'll be able to get fish over it again.
I've been here 30 years, and I've not seen. The road is worse from the water tanks to the trailhead than it is from the trailhead up to the third landing right now.
I don't know if that's good or bad. But.
I know. And believe me, I walk into a lot of hikers up there who don't want any traffic up there. But there's always been a dilemma with people up, going up, coming down at the same time. How do you get around each other? Who backs up? And there's still going to be a problem at the lower end.
Yeah, and that's why some of the people, like I said, the hikers, they like to park up there and walk the rim trail.
Yep. And bikers.
Now, yeah, and
but
bikers.
To get up there is the problem.
Yeah, and so they, you know, their recommendation would be go up there and park and walk the rim trail, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don't get in the way of the traffic.
I don't know how much work there is. There's that shale section right above Lakeview that had snow in it last time I was up there, so I haven't seen. That's where that Ford Explorer caught on fire a couple years ago and helicoptered out.
Yep.
That area right there I have not been into snow-free yet, so I don't know how bad that is, but that's a pretty good wash area right there, too. But I'm sure the city's going to go up and take their engineers up. And I met the guy who did the grading. He was actually walking it the day I walked, and we walked together and talked about what he was going to do and how he's going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
And he got it pretty much done to what he said he was going to do before the snow came. So, but I do walk it a lot, so if you want to report, give me an email, and I can kind of tell you what. Yeah. Take a picture for you, send it to you.
Yeah.
Thanks, John.
John's Hill Blog.
Yeah. Any other public comment on this?
Sure.
Okay.
Do you need to sign something?
No, it's okay. You can just spell me in.
Good evening. My name is Kurt Zellinga. I'm on the board of the High Sierra Flycasters. We represent flyfishermen. Carson Valley, including many members here from Carson City. That fishery, as I've told the board before, is actually one of the Endow success stories. It's probably one of the best fisheries in the state. It's an asset of the city. You know, the lake itself is not in the city party, but that brings people in, tourists, and we spend our money in your restaurants and tackle shops and everything else. I believe also that there's probably hunting up there and other recreational activities up there. So having that road open is great. It is the only public access that drops you at the doorstep of the state park. You can come up from Lakeview or you come up from Franktown, where it's called, but that involves 5 mile hike. This is the only one that drops you right at the doorstep. I'm very elated that this news here from Ann that the road's already been repaired and they still have some maintenance work to do. And our fishing season actually starts on the 1st up there of May. And with this light year, we may actually be up there that early. For this board, I know this board has no real jurisdiction there, except for maybe advice that you might be able to give to the city. I'd just like to thank you for your action previously in this matter and bringing it and keeping it on the forefront of their minds. Just thank you for that. And we look forward to fishing that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further comment?
Okay. This was the biggie. C.K. Bailey, once again, Carson City. Thank you for this. this is for letting us see this. This is good news from Ms. Bollinger. Wasn't really sure just how much progress is or was going to be made on this. There are individuals such as Bob, who represents what I call the South, like Douglas County and the gentleman who just spoke. And there's also those in the Reno, the Washoe County area, that are very interested in this as well. Bar none, the individuals in Carson City that I also represent, Carson Fly Fishing Club, and more. So this is really good news. We will be watching with, we'll be watching closely, because there's been instances in the past that that there have been, let's say, individuals in Carson City that did not want to necessarily see us, the public, up there at all. So to see that there is actually some motion, some movement going on is very appealing. And thank you, Tamar, for sending me this this on soft copy so I can send it to other, oh, thank you, to other individuals who are very interested in this. And thank you to this advisory board for its due diligence in putting this in the forefront. Thank you kindly.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we don't take any action on this, or? Okay. Okay, for possible action, discussion on possible action regarding advisory board member commitments to the March 16-17 Wildlife Commission meeting in Laughlin and to the May 4th and 5th Wildlife Commission meeting in Reno. Gil, you are going to Laughlin?
Okay. Yes, sir.
Is anybody else? No? Okay. I'll be with you a couple of days this week talking to you.
Okay.
Just to learn my job better, too. And find out how we, you know, figure out the best ways to communicate back and forth when I'm not able to make a meeting. So, anything from the others? How about the, I know I can go to the Reno meeting.
I will be in Hawaii that week.
Lucky guy.
You got a phone, you can teleconference.
I will not be using my phone at all, and I will be on a boat catching hopefully some good sea fish.
Whales.
Besides that.
You going to go to the Martin meeting?
I don't know yet.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll have to see what's going on.
Hey, they are so exciting.
But he was there at the last one.
Yeah, yeah. I will probably be there, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
I understand.
I definitely won't be in Vegas. But.
Okay. Future agenda items? Any comments? No? We'll open the floor to public comment at this point. You guys are all commented out, all? Okay. Do we have a motion to adjourn? And what's our next meeting date?
It would be the Monday before the next.
April.
April.
Go back.
It should be on the agenda.
Okay.
Go back five from May 4th.
Okay. Anyway, okay. So action for adjournment. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
Okay.
May 30th.
And let's have all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you very much.
Gentlemen, thank you.
I will thank you, and I will definitely be better prepared next time. I've got my Robert's Rules of Meetings that I'll review and get this stuff all figured out. I'm also going to make several visits to meet some of the city people.
Yes, how do you